Support for WYPR comes from University of Maryland Medical System, committed to advancing the health of Maryland through academic medicine. With locations across the state, care is delivered close to home. Learn more at ummms.org.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. It's midday with the mayor today. Muncie, the mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement here in Baltimore, is at the center of two disputes between the city and the inspector general and the state's attorney's office. We'll talk about what those disputes are and where things stand, among other issues, with Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott, who joins us on Zoom. Mr. Mayor, always a pleasure. Good to have you.
Always good to be with you, Tom.
So talk to me about this dispute between the law department and the Office of Inspector General. Isabel Cummings says that, you know, for the 8 years she's been the Inspector General, she's never had any problem, any barrier getting access to records that she needs to, you know, root out waste, fraud, and abuse. And all of a sudden, she's being denied access to certain records. How come?
Well, I'll just tell you this very simply, Tom. She still has access to records for her investigations. As you know, I'm a big believer in transparency, but I'm also a big, even bigger believer in following the law. I want you to understand, because I know this, there's two separate things with the OIG and in the law department. One, first and foremost, the only access that was cut off for the inspector general was to law department's lawyers and their files. Because, Tom, as you know, attorney-client information is privileged. No lawyer that graduated from any law school, no attorney that is worth their salt would allow anyone to have unfettered access to their client's information, to include advice that they're giving their client. That was discovered because a law department lawyer went into a file and saw someone on the file that had access to a file that was a privileged document, that was an individual that works for the inspector general, that was not tied to any investigation. And in fact, they looked back into their information, and that person had access to all of their files going back 17 plus years, longer than the OIG has even been with the city of Baltimore. The actions that they took cut that off, and that off solely because your folks at YPR would never allow someone from to be looking at the advice that you all's lawyers are giving you, opinions and all of these things. That is simply not okay.
Okay, you mentioned that the person who had access to that file was not related to an investigation that the OIG was doing. Yep. If it had been related to an OIG investigation,
right,
would that have been okay?
That's a different conversation. But as you know, when you're looking and doing an investigation like that, that's why we have subpoenas. That's why there's a process for that kind of information to be looked at, which lawyers can determine which information is privileged through attorney-client privilege. That is the core of the issue here. It's unfettered access. It's not that you can't get things. You cannot simply just have access openly to lawyers' things, right? Just a hypothetical, Tom. What if one of the council members, sometime in her time in office, had asked a law department, a lawyer, about opinion about the OIG? And they can have access to that document without getting, no, you have to be able to have a process. Now, secondarily, we're moving to the other point that you brought up about the Muncie documents where it ties to the state's attorney. Again, just as the case with the state's attorney, the city solicitor and her team let the OIG know that under Maryland state law, the city cannot share the information of juvenile records, financial information, medical, all of those kind of things with anybody who was not a party to that agreement with the state of Maryland. It is Maryland state law. And as you know, no local law can supersede state law, no matter who it is. And that is the reality for that case and that case alone.
Yeah, and that's a different case. That's a different case. And
yeah,
that is in response
case, yeah.
In response to Ivan Bates, the state's attorney. He had
an
independent opinion about his the letter that he sent to you all a couple months
no,
back?
No, Tom. Actually, Tom, you're talking. No, it's not about the letter. This was specifically about the information for Sidestep, which the state's attorney has requested some of the information, and the inspector general has requested some of the same information.
Right, but to get listeners up to speed, the letter said, we're not going to cooperate with Muncie anymore. And the reasons were, and he listed the reasons he thought he couldn't do that, and part of them had to do with the fact that it was impeding his ability to prosecute cases. He got an independent legal opinion asking whether or not he could do that, and that opinion said he could. You got an independent legal opinion asking if he could do that, and that legal opinion said he could not. So we have differing legal opinions, just like in the case of the Inspector General. We have David Plimer, who's an attorney formerly with Anne Arundel County, writing an op-ed in the Baltimore Brew, and he says the attorney-client privilege does not belong to the law department or to any individual city official or employee. It belongs to the city as a corporate entity. And then there are cites of law.
Well, Dave is wrong. It won't be the first time, won't be the last time that he's wrong.
You have a disagreement about the law in both of these cases. Ivan Bates told the Baltimore Sun that maybe this would end up being adjudicated in the courts. I mean, let's look down the road a little bit here, Mr. Mayor, and let's say it is adjudicated. Let's say you win. Let's say the city prevails if there is, in fact, a legal case about whether or not the state's attorney has to cooperate with Muncie as part of their work. As a practical matter, how's that going to work? I mean, there just seems to be such a chasm, such a schism between Muncie and the state's attorney's office. Is that a repairable relationship?
Well, I just want to be very clear, Tom. I'll be straightforward. My actual independent legal expert, who is a former state's attorney here in Baltimore, found that the claims don't hold any water. But I'll say what I said from the beginning of this thing. I disagree with the state's attorney's decision to walk away from the coalition. As I said to you before, I think it's motivated by politics, not by fact. But he and his team will always have a seat at the table. And I think you have to understand who's at that table. Alongside not just Muncie and my office, not just BPD, but what your listeners and everyone in this city needs to understand that is not being touched upon enough in the press is that the Attorney General of Maryland, the highest lawyer in the land, is a deep partner in GVRS and with Muncie each and every day. The highest lawyer in this state does not have any of those concerns that have been raised up. The governor's office does not have those concerns, and we're going to continue to work and welcome him back to the table. Regardless, the work for us will not be interrupted, right? And the reality is, Tom, is that when you even think about GVRS, BPD is still out there doing their portion with the arrests and investigations, and they still have to be prosecuted by the state's attorney or the attorney general's office. So even when they say they won't work with Muncie, they're working with a Muncie product, because that's just the reality of the world. And the only thing that matters to me is the work. That's it.
And we should let listeners know that we have invited State's Attorney Bates back to the program. We look forward to him coming. And we are going to be speaking with Isabel Cumming, the Inspector General of the City of Baltimore, a week from Tuesday when she gets back from vacation. If you've just joined us, it's Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott is my guest. I'm Tom Hall. If you have a question or comment for the mayor, we'll try to sneak it in if we can. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. So, Mr. Mayor, you all released a report about the CityStat function of government. Various agencies keep track with data about the work that they're doing through the year. What are the standouts, the highlights of CityStat? Are you comfortable with the efficacy and the productivity of your agencies in city government?
Yeah, I think that we just have to continue to know, and we want folks to know that we are going to continue to not just do CityStat, but really evolve CityStat into what we know has been something that's been very important for us in the city of Baltimore. When you think about back in the day, as you know, Tom, city stat was very limited with the agencies that they were that they were working with. But I want to let you know this. In 2025, we held 116 city stat meetings. We did, coordinating departments, using city resources effectively, but and improving services. But the agencies, police, fire, health, finance, DGS, housing, public works, rec and parks, and DOT. But we also had focus areas as well, IT, cleanup, downtown, permits, workplace safety, and around youth. And what we're going to continue to do is evolve in how we use data to have the impact that we need on the residents across the city of Baltimore. And we just want our residents to know that we're not going to stop.
Just to be clear, the data that you're collecting is self-reported by each of the agencies, right?
No. We're talking about 311 data in most cases, right? We're talking about if the police are there, if it's police stat, we're obviously talking about crime data and call for service data and things like that. But we're talking about for the other agencies, we're also talking about data that's coming in from our residents and coming in from our staff and inspectors who we send out to as a part of our efforts to hold the agencies accountable, right? I think that is why you personally, even with snow removal, Tom, you personally see me on social media telling folks like, look, telling me is great, but I also need you to put that service request number in so that I could use it for tracking purposes, so that we can use it for data purposes, and we can use that to have the service improved.
Well, for example, there's a section of the report, the City Stat report, and again, this is for 2025, called Clean Stat. And there's a very pretty graph that shows that the number of issues of illegal dumping has gone down, considerably after a 311 pilot program that began in May of last year. But again, you drive around the city all the time, Mr. Mayor. You are out there. I mean, no one can by any means complain that you're not connected to what's going on in every neighborhood of our city. You see the city. Is the city clean enough for you when it comes to graffiti, when it comes to trash, when it comes to illegal dumping? I mean, are we at the level of productivity and efficacy that you're satisfied with?
Well, you know me, Tom. I want to be perfect, so I'm never going to be satisfied. Are we cleaner? Yes. Are we as clean as we need to be? No. But that is a total Baltimore conversation, right? As someone who spends time out with the graffiti team, the number one thing that we talk about, even when I'm out there with them, is that we're cleaning a spot, and then a week or two later, it's right back up, right? Or the amount of times I'm out on a community cleanup. I think I may have told you this story. We were down in Southwest Baltimore one time, and the community was so thankful that we brought the full weight of city government to this neighborhood that sees a lot of dumping. And then later that evening, the community president was on my phone crying, saying that neighbors had dumped right back in the same spot. We also have to have a deeper conversation about, yes, for me, first and foremost, improving city government, but a cultural conversation that needs to be had with how we do those things. And like we had legislation that we thought we were going to need in Annapolis to help us with NVA and state records for our housing inspectors who are doing that work on illegal dumping. We think that we're going to come to agreement on that. That will help us. We're going to use every tool that we can, but we just got to get better. I'm not going to be satisfied till we're perfect, Tom.
When it comes to snow removal, and I talked to Faith Leach, your city administrator, just a couple of days ago here on Midday, you've got bobcats, you've got various equipment out on the streets trying to make a dent into some of these gigantic snow drifts that are not really snow drifts, they're ice drifts. They're difficult to remove, they're difficult to chop away at, as anybody who's tried to chop the sidewalk in front of their house can attest to. This is
all about back hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's a lot of frustration, Mr. Mayor. I'm sure you've heard it, from folks, because sidewalks are not cleared, because lanes on some of the, even the major streets are reduced to one lane of traffic that usually have two or three. The left turn lane, the right turn lane is blocked with snow. Still, there are lots of people who have not complied with, you know, the city charter, which says when it snows, you got to shovel the walk down to the sidewalk in front of your house. You know, I live on a street where 20 houses on our block, maybe eight of them haven't done that. And it's dangerous, you know, folks walking their dogs, folks walking up and down the street. It's difficult. And my neighborhood's not the only one having problems with that. There are sidewalks around Penn Station. We've heard from several listeners saying, you know, getting to in and out of Penn Station, you know, major hub, the train station, is difficult because the sidewalks haven't been done. How, in terms of volume, is it a budget issue? Is there the possibility of hiring more independent contractors than are currently working to address this problem in an even more aggressive way?
Well, I think that, Tom, I think that we all have to back up a little bit, right? First, I'll go in reverse. We're going to be finding people who are not cleaning their sidewalks, right? We know that some people may not know that, right? You and I have been in Baltimore a very long time. We know that folks should know that they're responsible for their sidewalk, whether they're private business or a private individual. But we also have to understand that this storm is different, right? And for me, Tom, right, I know everyone, we like to move on fast and have what I would call rose-colored glasses on memories. I was here in city government for 2016 and 2010. I know the realities of the improvements that have been made. But this storm is different for many different reasons. But most importantly, because we're not just talking about snow. We're talking about essentially breaking up concrete and moving it all around the city. And our crews and contractors, which we have more than we've ever had, right, working on this around the clock to deal with this issue, have done a great job with the circumstances, literally to working 24/7 to clear roads, right, not stopping. And we know that no matter what time of the day they're working, someone is going to be unhappy, right? I had two nights ago, I had someone say, yesterday morning, I woke up someone saying like, oh, why are they working with this big equipment in my neighborhood overnight or on the street overnight to clear snow? This morning, I had someone to say, why are they clearing snow during rush hour? Someone else said earlier this week, why are they clearing snow during the middle of the day, right? We have to understand that when you're talking about a process like this, when you look at the amount of snow that you have at Pimlico, that you have at Lot O, that you have at all these other locations, the crews are out there working and they're pulling that stuff out.
Are there enough of them? Are there enough crews?
Yes, there are enough of them, especially when you understand limitations even that the contractors have themselves, right? And you understand the equipment that we've brought in from outside, and we understand how much this is going to be a significant expense for the city of Baltimore. And we have to understand that I said on that Friday that this is not going to be a normal storm a plowing operation, that it will be phases. And we have to get through the initial phase of pushing and recovery and now relocating and melting. They're going to get to every place. But when you think about the infrastructure of the city, when you think about what our contractors and our city crews have been doing, they've done a great job. But yes, I always tell folks we're going to be better. There'll be after actions and things about what we can do better, looking at even seeing if there's other kinds of equipment that we could probably purchase. But that even is a question, Tom, because the reality is if you go out and buy this some equipment that you won't use for another 10 years, right, then it probably won't work 10 years from now. So there has to be a balance there. But I do think that we have to have conversations internally. And again, just like we said with the trash, externally, yeah, about what we're doing, especially helping out. You know, we had the Snow Corps. I want to thank all of those folks who signed up to volunteer.
Yeah,
to
those
sign
folks
up
who
to
are
help
helping
us,
out the neighbors, you
helping
know,
out
the seniors,
helping out
the
neighbors.
Folks who can't,
but we need a lot more of that, Tom, because I interacted with a lot of folks, seniors and disabled folks, who had able-bodied neighbors who shoveled their walks and just didn't do the three three patches of cement in front of their neighbor's house. This is Baltimore. We used to be a time where that would never happen. As you know, I grew up in a 2,500 block of West Cold Spring Lane. No one shoveled anything except me and my brothers, front and back, and to include the alley where we all parked, because that was the way we were raised during that time.
Let me, I know we need to let you go, but here's an example, and this is something I want to ask you about because it's particularly poignant, particularly troubling to think about folks experiencing homeless in weather like we've had, with sub-freezing weather for all these, you know, these past many days. We have a Phyllis sends an email, says, I'm a city school employee, and a couple of days before the storm, one of my students informed me that they're experiencing homelessness. We called the emergency shelter hotline. We were thankful for the cot that was available for one night. But when we asked for guidance for a more permanent shelter, we were told, and I quote, you can do your research on Google. Right? There have been multiple instances, according to Phyllis, where I or my colleagues have called the hotline and the staff has been unprofessional or the process has been unnecessarily cumbersome. So what are your thoughts, Mr. Mayor? This comes from Phyllis. On how services at the Mayor's Office of Homeless Services can be improved. When we talk about city stats and stuff, you know, it's a these are lives that are literally on the line.
Yeah, Tom, if your folks can share that email with us, I'd like to get with Ms. Phyllis directly, me and my team, because what she's saying is just unacceptable. The truth is that we didn't let anybody go out during the storm. I literally ordered not just homeless services, but as we went into Friday and Saturday night, ordered BPD that there's no refusal. Everybody has to go into one of our facilities. That's why we open extra facilities, because we could not have people out on the street. So we'll if you can provide that email, we'll follow up with, I'll follow up with Ms. Phyllis directly and see what the hell is going on.
All right, we will do that, and we will speak to you next month. Brandon Scott is the mayor of Baltimore.
Sir.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate it. We'll talk again.
Anytime. Thank you, Tom.
And up next, it's Midday at the Movies with Jed Dietz and Eric Hatch. They join me on the other side of a quick break. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.